Welcome to this episode where I chat to the amazing Marcus Fernande. He is the principal of the UK's largest homeopathy school, the Centre for Homeopathic Education, and it's the amazing homeopathy college where I studied. Marcus is a repeat guest. He was on episode 7 where he discusses how he got into homeopathy and how he was originally intending to be a rock star. So do listen to that. But in this episode, we talk about why homeopathy is re-entering its golden age and actually how COVID contributed to that. We talk about finding your purpose, living in alignment, and why homeopathy at home is one of the most important things individuals can do for their health. We discuss water and intention and its relationship to homeopathy and how homeopathy gets to the root cause. We also discuss potency, the regulation of homeopathic remedies, and Marcus's view on the future of homeopathy and where things are going. So listen in. So thank you, Marcus, for coming back on. And people need to check out one of the early episodes. You were one of my initial guinea pigs. Thank you.
I remember it well, Lisa. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you so much. So it's been, we were just saying before we hit record, that it's actually been over two years, I think, since you were on.
Wow.
And it was in that, because it was 2021, I think, when I started it. So a lot's changed since then. We were in the midst of COVID craziness. And yeah, what's been going on in the last couple of years for you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you say that. I mean, I don't know whether people find it, but I find it difficult to reference the past 3 years. I mean, it's almost, we can really draw a line in the sand of COVID and before COVID, you know, the sort of pandemic lockdown before and after. And I think a lot has shifted these 2 years. Now the sort of dust has settled. A lot has changed. And I think people's concept of health and well-being has changed. I think it really has recalibrated people's relationship to health. Because I think during lockdown, people were, especially in the early days of the pandemic, people were shocked that there was no health solution coming from medicine. This wonderful modern medicine that we all thought would be there to save us, and we're always told that, actually wasn't there and didn't have a solution. And I think for a lot of people, it really rocked their world and rocked their belief system, especially if that's all you had, that you didn't have a concept of healthcare outside the mainstream of Western medicine. So I think what happened is, for a lot of people, it really rocked the world. And I think things have shifted to the point where it's become forefront of the minds, health and well-being for themselves, for the family, loved ones. And I think that's a huge shift. And so that's in a general sense of health and well-being. But for homeopathy, I have never seen, I've been waiting for this for 30 years. I've never seen such a shift and demand for homeopathy, for homeopathic education, people changing careers, wanting, you know, a shift in that. And I think it's great. You know, I think it's amazing. And to be honest with you, I don't think there's enough homeopaths now to sort of deal with the demand of people that want it. And I think it's a fantastic. And like I said, I've been waiting 30 years for this. So I'm telling the students this. I'm saying, hey, you know, all the people that we train, this is, you're in the golden age. This is the time. Because if we don't take this opportunity and let people know what homeopathy is, what it can do, then it'll be a shame, because people are looking for it. They're looking for a more natural healthcare solution to the health problems. It's like there's been a huge wake-up call, and also a huge wake-up call around the pharmaceutical industry. Oh, I don't need to get too heavy into that, but people are really quite shocked, and especially things coming out like a Netflix painkiller about OxyContin. I don't know if you've seen that.
I'm dope sick. I've been watching, and I'm like, I mean, we kind of already knew.
It's all news to us, yeah.
But how Disney and Netflix have put that out, I'm surprised in some ways.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, you've got to be sceptical as well. However, it's had a huge impact on people. You know, so many people I know who are not into the whole alternative way of thinking, or that's really shocked them to the core. I mean, Sackler family, I think they've just paid out $9 billion in damages. I think it's one of the highest payouts ever. And so I think it's all this. There's been a real shift I think, in awareness of challenging the mainstream narrative. I mean, today I was in a shop. I was just chatting to this guy who runs the shop, and he was just saying about the news. He doesn't trust the news anymore. It's like everything's just been completely turned around, and everybody's questioning things. Not everybody, obviously, but a lot of people are. And I think it's only a good thing. I think it's a good thing. We need to always critically be thinking all the time about everything that is presented to us, and especially what we put in our bodies and the bodies of our children. We should always be questioning it. Bit of a long answer there, Lisa.
I love it. And, you know, actually with the whole dope sick and painkiller, the OxyContin, I think that is what sets homeopathy apart, is that with the pharmaceutical industry, the money, like I often think money drives very different behavior, and homeopathy can't be patented. You know, there is, well, maybe it can, but like not really. You know, anyone can kind of make remedies if they really wanted to, and it drives a completely different behavior in terms of the outcome, like with pharmaceuticals wanting to. I always think the pharmaceutical industry should be not for profit. The fact that these industries can make so much money, like, are they actually wanting us to be healthy? Because there isn't really any money to be made in healthy people.
As I always say, the pharmaceutical industry is not in the wellness business, it's in the sickness business. And that's fine. If you understand that, that's fine. That's their business model. However, if I'm going to look at my own healthcare and my kids and my family, then I'm going to look at other ways to get my body to heal itself on a more natural healthcare solution. And I think this is where, listen, I'm not anti-medicine. I say this a lot. I'm not anti-medicine. I know some great doctors. But to me, it's like a scale. You know, if I'm in a car accident, the first place I want to be is a hospital. I'll be taking Arnica if I'm conscious. And that actually happened to me, but on the way. But if I've got a chronic disease, I'm going to look at other ways to try to get my body to heal itself before I go down that route. So I think it's about choice. I think always about choice. It doesn't have to be black or white. It doesn't have to be them against us. There's too much division like that and polarity in the world. What it's about is choice, that we have the freedom to choose, what we want to do. And like I said, what we put in our bodies and the bodies of our kids. So I think as long as you're very clear on that, then you can also be quite neutral about it. Of course, we can get angry about it. Of course, we can. But I think really the better way is to be more neutral about it and just see it for what it is.
Yeah, and an integrated healthcare system. Like, antibiotics can be life-saving on occasion. I'm completely with you on that. It needs to be, we need to be balanced, but we should always have that health freedom and freedom of choice.
Yeah, and I think that's key. That's key to it all. It's the freedom to choose. It's to have that choice, whatever that choice may be. And yeah, you know, it's we don't need this division. We don't need this polarity, because really, you know, I don't know. It doesn't serve. It doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve anybody, really, I don't think. But we should question everything.
Completely agree. So, you know, I got tingles when you were saying that it's the golden age of homeopathy, because I mean, I kind of don't have that overview, because I found homeopathy quickly and I graduated in 2020. So for me, it's like I've only seen this side. But do you see, like, the students and people that you're getting to sign up, is it different from what it was pre-COVID?
I think so. I think it's because I interview everybody that comes onto our courses, whether it's the fast track course or the 4-year part time. I think what the difference is, and I say this when I do open days, is that people are much more looking for purpose and meaning in their life. It's like the working from home. It's like the way that people change their lives during lockdown. I know, for example, a lot of fathers who would never go back to as it was before, because now they've got a deeper relationship with their children because they spent more time with them and that changed. I don't think something's fundamentally changed within people. They don't want it to go back to the way it was. There has been a recalibration, as I said earlier. So people are looking for much more purpose and meaning in their life. And what does that mean? It means, well, what am I doing with my life? Has it got an impact? Has it got a purpose? It's not just about earning money just to pay the bills. Obviously, that's a reality as well. But now people seem to be searching for something more. Because I, you know, as a practitioner, I've seen so many patients and clients over the 30 odd years I've been practicing, where often disease comes from people not doing what they want to be doing. They're in a job they don't want to be in, the relationship they don't want to be in either, and it's lack of love and joy in their life. So often that's what happens, and people get disease. And so when we are living the truth of who we are, when we are living on purpose, when we are living in alignment, then that's to me true health and freedom. That's what health is as well. It's freedom, isn't it? So people now are deciding that they want to take that step and have an impact, you know. And there's very few things in life, Lisa, I think, that can have an impact on people's lives. And homeopathy is definitely 100% one of them. And especially if you've had it yourself and been treated yourself, or you've treated, again, friends and family and kids, and you know what it can do. You know what it can do. And so to me, there's been an explosion this past, since the pandemic, since the last 3 years. And it doesn't look like it's slowing down. I mean, we recently, on last week, had a live webinar, free live webinar on the matridonals, the remedies. You know, we had 2,200 odd people attend that. I mean, wow. these are big numbers. That's just a webinar that we do. Like, we do them all the time. So I think it's people's interest is there. They want to know more. And I think also culturally things are changing with a different generation coming up as well. Because to me, just on the thing around sustainability, to me, homeopathy is the ultimate in sustainability. I've always said that. Because you need a little bit. You need a little bit.
Yeah.
So you can't get much more sustainable as homeopathy. So it ticks so many boxes. It ticks so many boxes, taking people mentally, emotionally, as well as physically, you know, truly holistically, but also working with the body, not working against the body. Bringing it back around to the pharmaceutical and drugs, because what the drugs do is they suppress the symptoms, as you know. They work against the body. They're trying to stop what we call the vital force, or also we call it in homeopathy, or qi in Chinese medicine, or prana in Ayurveda. What homeopathy does is enhance that, and it helps you work more, a bit like we're using a muscle in the gym. The more that you stimulate your vital force, the stronger it becomes, and then the less likely you are to get sick, the less likely you are to be stuck in a job you don't want to be in, or a relationship you're unhappy in, because that vital force gives you clarity.
It is the ultimate. I think homeopathy is like the ultimate red pill, because you might come across it thinking, oh, I use some belladonna, I don't know, for a throat infection, and then you see it works, and then you start to see how it's made, and then you're like, hang on, this defies the rules of chemistry and the whole how pharmaceuticals are made. Then you go looking into that, then you start to look at the philosophy and learn about suppression, then you learn about the inheritability of diseases and energy states, and I think you just go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah,
and it's quite mind-blowing.
Oh, totally. Well, I think I said it on the last podcast. When I first heard about homeopathy, I was sat there, this kid, 20-year-old kid, who was in a band and wanted to be a rock and roll star. I still do, deep down. When the late, great Robert Davidson, who taught most people in the UK here, who set up a college in the late 70s, when he started speaking and talking about homeopathy, you know, I talked about it, I think, last time. I can remember it now. It gives me tingles. I just went very quiet inside, very still. I'd never experienced that before. And it was like I was hearing truth for the first time. But the second thought was, if this is true, how come the whole world doesn't know about it? Because it would blow my mind so much. And then the second thought was, I'm going to make sure people do. And actually, one of the fundamental things for me was, as a student going to India, I went to India in my final year, spent a month in India. And I sat in with different homeopaths, went to homeopathic hospitals. This is, 1993. Traveled all the way around India, basically with a rucksack on my back. And I could not believe, I felt like I'd come home. This was like, there was a homeopath or homeopathic pharmacy on every street corner. There was homeopathic hospitals that I visited. These were proper hospitals with wards of patients and outpatients and specialities of certain areas like oncology. It was incredible. And I remember thinking, this is the blueprint. This is the blueprint, what we could have back in the UK. And we used to have this. This is the crazy thing. There was homeopathic hospitals back in the day in London and Great Ormond Street, you know, in Liverpool, Tunbridge Wells, Bristol. These are hospitals. These are hospitals with wards that treated just like hospitals do today. In America, even more so. The amount of homeopathic medical schools and hospitals across America. So why did it all stop? Well, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast of the history of that and the FDA in America and all the different things that went on. But it's, you know, we've had that. This is not a new age thing. There's so much clinical experience when you dig into it from eminent doctors and physicians, because they were the ones that used to practice homeopathy.
Yeah.
You know, but in India, it's still the case. They still go to a medical school and train as a homeopath with a proper medical training. So this is not something new. And I think that's important. But it's like there was a golden age, but I think this is a bigger golden age because it's almost like on a global level because of technology, because of communication, because of the way that the world is now. It travels a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting time.
Absolutely exciting. I was on a tutorial today trying to say to them how excited I was, because it is, because you got the perspective of that. And it's, you know, but all we've got to do is to share it. I mean, that's why I say to everybody, share it, share your experience of what it can do and how it's helped you or how it, you know, and I'm, you know, as you know, I'm a big believer in home prescribers. That's, to me, if you get homeopathy in the home, it can transform everything. It can transform everything. So
I think this is why I'm so passionate about making sure people get a homeopathy kit in every home and know how to use it. Because I think if I'd known, I didn't know about homeopathy. It just wasn't even remotely on my radar. And I think, God, if I had known about it when I'd had my babies, you know, my eldest daughter probably wouldn't have gone on to get a lot of her health issues because she had lots of antibiotics. We know about disease suppression, all the other things that I did as well. And I think had I known, and I was quite angry, you know, I've said spoken about this in the past, when I used a remedy for the first time, my initial reaction was like, my God, this is amazing. And then this anger of how has this been hidden from us? Why don't we know about it? And that's why I'm on sort of a mission just to share it as much as possible, because I think people don't know enough. They still don't know enough about it.
Absolutely. Totally. And it's things like this, like podcasts like this. And I think you're doing a great job with this podcast, because I speak to people who listen to it and inspired by it.
Thank you.
It's just doing our bit. It's just spreading the word, because that's how things spread. Like I said, this is why we're in unique times, because the ability to be able to get your message out in different multiple platforms, it is unprecedented. I mean, it's just like, you know, I'm talking about being in a band. When we're in a band, we had to go and record something, go in the studio and record it stuff, you know, or get an old sort of like 4-track type of thing that you used to have to hire to do it. Now, you know, and then you'd have to do loads of gigs and get, you know, all the leaflets and flyers and stuff. Now you can go online and you can basically do everything on a computer as far as music production, but also have access to the world.
Mm.
Access to the world instead of going through record companies and that. So everything has changed. But I think to me, what we're coming into now is about community. We've got to come together. We have to share things. We have to help each other. And that is through, I think, even though this is sometimes poo-pooed in science, anecdotal evidence, but really what is that? It's stories.
Mm.
It's stories, you know. That's what we've, you know, throughout history, there's been storytellers. We've told stories to our children. You tell stories, you know, as a grandfather or grandmother to your kid. This is how things have always been. And I do think homeopathy is also like an oral tradition. You know, that when you teach, you can read homeopathy in the books, but actually in a lecture, it comes alive. Why does it come alive? Because that person that's teaching you has probably got 20, 30, 40, 50 years of a clinical experience. So they completely embody it. And when somebody completely embodies it, then it has tremendous impact in that lecture. But what's a lecture? It's a story. And they talk about cases and their stories. So I think it's important that we do share and share the information as much as we can on our own experiences of that. And that, to me, is equally as valid as everything. But just back to another point you said about chemistry. And this is often the problem that science has with homeopathy, that how can it work? It's diluted to the point there's nothing left. But I really feel that the answer for homeopathy is not in chemistry. It's in physics. That's where the anti-homeopathy is. So that people are looking in the wrong direction. I know there's a lot of people looking in that in the physics direction, but that's the way you get quantum physics, quantum mechanics. Not that I'm an expert at this, just for the record, but that's where the answer lies. And just because we don't understand the mechanism behind it, I mean, look at aspirin. They didn't know how aspirin worked, you know, for I think about 80 years, but it worked. So it's like, let's use it. If it's working, let's use it. And then we can figure out. But if it's going to help people, then let's use it.
And we are like more science and more information's coming out, like all the stuff on water, like Vaida Austin. Do you follow her work?
No, but I know about water.
Oh yeah, she's actually not a scientist, but she does crystallography where she freezes the water when it's been exposed.
Exactly.
She sort of developed and furthered Dr. Masaramoto's work. And it's amazing the images that come up in water. Yeah. And it's like just purely from an art form. I'm like, that something's going on there. You know, we might not understand how yet, but something is going on.
Yeah. Totally. And I met him, he's passed away now, Moto. I met him in Prague many years ago. A lovely man, really lovely man. But I'd say to anybody listening, check out his book called The Messages of Water, where basically he puts words, wasn't it, like love and hate on vials of water, froze it, and then they saw the crystals. I don't know if you've talked about this in previous podcasts, but it's an amazing, you can see these crystals like the one of hate, the word hate, and the effects like all distorted the crystal, then the one of love and it's all beautiful. Yeah, I mean, water. In fact, I went to a lecture by a guy called Dr. Gerald Pollack, 2019 at the Royal Society of Medicine in London. And he spent the last 40 years researching water. And the first thing he said in his lecture was, don't think we know everything about water. We don't. We really don't. He said, we think, you know, we don't really understand how, you know, clouds are formed. And he was going, I think, oh my goodness. You know, you think that this science is done and dusted, but it's not. Water is an incredible thing.
Mm. Yeah, it is. And there's a lot of, I'll try and put some links actually in the show notes, because there is some really fascinating stuff coming out there. And I think it links homeopathy, the answers perhaps to how it works.
Absolutely. And put the links in, because the talk for the Royal Society of Medicine with Gerald Pollack, that was recorded. So it's on YouTube. So yeah, put the links in for that. Definitely.
Actually, I want to ask you something. Sort of a tenuous link between that and Masaramoto. I just started thinking about, have you seen his rice experiment that he did?
No, I haven't seen it.
I ran a home ed workshop for a group of kids, and I got them all to do this. So Masaramoto, he got three jars of rice, and one of them he put the word love, and every day you had to give it loving words, one hate, and then one completely ignored. And it was actually the one that was completely ignored, the jar of rice, that would go the most moldy. Then the one that had hate, and where you had to say hateful things to it every day, it went then. And the love one didn't really go very moldy at all over the time. So obviously a lack of attention and love is worse than even negative attention. And it was amazing. All the kids in this home ed group, they all did this experiment, and we all had the same. And I couldn't get over the rice that we were ignoring in the jar.
Going.
So I think all kids should do this to demonstrate
absolutely
the power. But intention, like I've seen some homeopaths talk about paper remedies or making them on machines, or actually it's the intention. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Big question. Big question. And just before we get on to that, let's talk about agrohomeopathy at some point, because that reminded me of something too with homeopathy and plants and different things. So what's my thought of intention? I think in any therapeutic relationship, I think there's always, it's almost like magic in the space in between, you know, especially when you're treating somebody, if they come to see you or on Zoom, however, that sort of that relationship. And I think it plays a part in any healing. I really do. I think but it always comes back to, I think, the practitioner as well. It's like how connected they are with themselves, you know, especially in the heart. I know before I see my patients or my clients, before I see them, I really try to go into a place in my heart where I just put it out there. How can I be of service to this person? And let it go. because we can't always figure it out, but we've also got to allow it to happen. And sometimes you'll get that with clients, with patients, where they'll say, and they can see, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but and all this information comes out. And I'm sure you've experienced that. And that's about creating the space in between. I think it's really, really crucial that people feel safe, that people feel listened to. I often say you can't think and listen at the same time. You've got to be truly present with people. And the more present you are, the more present they are in that space. So I think if your intention as well for that person is for their is for them to heal, for them to find that healing place within themselves, because I truly believe all the healing wisdom we're ever going to need is within us. And I also truly think that people are perfect. You know, that I think we don't think people are broken. They may feel it, but actually who we are innately is perfect. We have innate health. So I think we're tapping into that wisdom. I don't know if I'm answering your question about attention, but I'm coming maybe from another angle of intention. But the question you're asking me is, sometimes homeopaths tell patients, if they haven't got the remedy, to write it down on a piece of paper, the remedy, put a glass of water over it, then sip the water. Does it work? I've seen it work. I've done it on myself in situations. But it's back to what we said, where the root of homeopathy is. It's not in chemistry. Mm. It's not in the material. It's in, like we said, back to quantum physics, back to quantum mechanics, that intention.
And there's a few. Sorry, Marcus.
No. I'm just.
I think there's a few different angles as well. Because homeopathy works on skeptics. So we come to agro homeopathy in a sec. But also, like with the whole, you know, if you look at German New Medicine, which talks about, I just was reading a book on German New Medicine, which was amazing. I was a bit like, this is actually true. This is like, you know, almost as mind blowing as homeopathy. Have you gone into German New Medicine?
A long, long time ago. Yeah.
Well, it was, and the thing is, it was talking about, you know, the cause of a lot of disease being a conflict or a shock and having to get that resolution. And actually that's the beauty of homeopathy as well. You've got that discussion as well, and light can be shone sometimes on what event may have preceded your health issues, which can be glaringly obvious sometimes. Like when you're, I've had this happen where I'm seeing my homeopath and they're like, well, what's going on, you know, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I've been, and I'm like, this is so obvious, like what triggered me into this health issue, how did I not see this? So yeah, it can absolutely that as well.
But also the practitioners allow, this is back to this space in between, this space, that place of neutrality, that place where it comes up of itself. It's like having an insight, isn't it? You can't force an insight. An insight comes of itself. But often it's when we don't have a lot on our mind. So in that consultation, I think, you know, you're in a therapeutic relationship and it comes of itself, that insight. But as you said, just as we do as homeopaths, what do? Somebody comes in with migraines for 5 years and we say, you take all the symptoms of the migraine, what makes it better, what makes it worse, what's the sensation like? Then the next big question is the homeopath we ask, when did it all start? That simple question, often nobody's ever asked them. Never asked that question. Never been asked before. Well, what do you mean? Well, how long have you had the migraine? I've had them for 5 years. What was happening in your life 5 years ago? Big, big question. Well, what do you mean? Well, you know, did you have any trauma, anything physically, emotionally? Just say the word emotionally and they burst into tears. Oh, okay. What happened? Well, that's when my mother died. Or that's when I got divorced. Or that's when I got made redundant. Whatever it is comes to the surface. And so in homeopathy too, it's obvious. We're always often looking for what we call the etiology or the cause behind it. We're looking what was traumatic at that time, what triggered. Because often these physical symptoms are just external manifestations of our internal state, which haven't been dealt with, that haven't been expressed. So the job of the homeopath is to go and go to the cause. And I use that analogy, and I'm going to say, and people are probably sick of me saying this, especially students, you may be sick of me saying this, Lisa, you may have heard it enough, but I always use that the car dashboard analogy. Have you heard this one before?
Yeah, I love it. Tell the listeners.
Well, I'm going to tell you again. It's in my book as well.
Good.
No, because if the oil light flashes, it means there's something wrong in the engine. But if you just take the bulb out or just suppress the symptoms, there's still a problem in the engine and the car's going to break down 2 or 3 miles down the road. So what the homeopath does It goes into the engine, fixes the oil problem, and the light goes off by itself. So this is back to we're like a detective. We're always going in, trying to find out if there's a possible cause. There's not always a cause. Obviously, sometimes it can be hidden. But if you've got to look for it to see if it's there, always go for the obvious. And so instead of treating them just the migraines, you treat the cause behind the migraines, which may be grief, suppression of emotions, resentment. There can all these things that are kept in, and the migraine is a manifestation of that. So I think, I don't know how we got back on, I got onto that, but it seemed like it was relevant.
You know, it was. I love it. We're going.
But it's. I think it's getting to the cause behind things, and I think we have to look for the obvious. Sorry, that's what you said. The obvious things. So the obvious things often are the simplest things. I think life's about simplicity in life in general. The way that we live our life should be simple, but often these simple things, like I said, in that art and the conversation with your practitioner, often it will just come out as an insight. And once you get it, that can shift. I've seen patients and clients shift in the consultation and they don't need a remedy. So they've taken the remedy, because all the remedy I see, especially in chronic cases, all the remedy does is take you back to that position where you can decide again. It's taking you back. So back to the story of the migraines and the grief, it can actually take people back to the point where, do I hold on to this or do I let it go? Mm-hmm. And I've had patients, you know, you give them the remedy, they come back and say, how's your migraines? Yeah, a lot better. But what was that remedy gave? I stopped crying for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking about my mother or my ex-partner or whatever the situation is. But I feel like it's gone. I feel like something's lifted. Yeah, because they took them back to that place where they could decide again whether to hold on or to let it go.
And it can be with people that want to choose to see a homeopath, like the chronic issues. Yeah. It can be not difficult, but sometimes you do have to revisit or move through stuff that's perhaps trapped inside, or, you know, to let go. Like you were saying, people that come back say, I cried for a few days, but there will be that healing afterwards.
Absolutely.
Do you tell people what remedy you're giving when?
Yeah,
you...
always do. Yeah, well, I had this actually on. I don't know if you know, but I do a thing called Chinwag with Eugenia Crew, where we talk about these sort of things, what homeopaths do, and different things. I personally always tell people. I think people should know, because I remember early in my homeopathic career where some patients would come to see me and they say, oh yeah, I used to see a homeopath, they come in with eczema. Oh yeah, I used to see a homeopath 10 years ago and I had eczema and they gave me this remedy. It was amazing. It all cleared up. I go, what was the remedy? And they go, oh no, they wouldn't tell me. It's like, really? We could have sorted it all out if we only knew. So sometimes homeopaths won't tell people. I don't get that, to be honest with you. I think people should know, because I think part of homeopathy is education. I think, you know, you wouldn't go to a doctor and he give you some medication and he say, what is that? I'm not telling you.
I mean, do you tell them before or do you tell them at the follow-up?
No,
or does it depend?
No, I tell them. You know, I'm giving you this remedy, and this is why I'm giving you this remedy.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I think it's important that I share, again, part of the job as a practitioner is that we help educate people, especially in a different health paradigm, if they're not used to it. So I think it's important that we explain why. Why am I giving you this? I'm giving this because this is how I see your case. Mm. This is what I think could happen as well. Because I'm walking alongside my client, my patient. I'm walking along, we're on a journey together. Not me saying, take this. This is the old allopathic way of doing things. I have all the knowledge. You're just a mere patient client. Take this. You know, I've got side effects. Well, here's another drug to stop that side effects. And I'm on 2 drugs. Oh, I've got some. You know, I think it's important that we share and we are, it's much more, I don't know, it's much more equitable, if that's the right word. I don't know. It's much more sort of, we're on the same level. I'm just walking alongside you.
It's a partnership, isn't it?
Partnership, like, exactly. That's probably a better word. Yeah, partnership. Definitely a partnership.
Do you ever have anyone that refuses? Are there any remedies that people are a bit more like, do they refuse to take it or a bit more nervous, a particular remedy?
Yeah, well, again, it always gives you an indication of the type of patient. As you know, in homeopathy, people may not be that familiar, but there's certain remedies and the gut-like characteristics that they have about personalities. So people like arsenicum patients who are very anxious about things, or laxis people who are very suspicious. Sometimes I've come across that with people, and I say, well, it's your choice.
I had a laxis patient once, and my God, he was just so needed laxis. I cannot explain how much he needed laxis, and he wouldn't take him.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
but I was like, God, it's going to help you so much, and you're really validating even more the fact you need this. But yeah,
well, it's their choice. It's about free will, isn't it? You know, I have people who try to put remedies into, you know, the partner's tea to try to, you know, change them. It ain't going to work. It's free will. It's free will. You know, people have free will, but sometimes though, at least on that point, it's a really interesting point. Sometimes people have come to see me, and you get to a point, and you know where people can be because you've done it clinically. You know where people can be, and you know, to let go of things and to move through things. But sometimes people aren't ready to go there. Mm-hmm. And that was a big lesson for me, that often people say, no, I think I'm going to stop. I don't feel that I can, you know, deal with this at the moment. And you get a bit disappointed as a new practitioner because you know you can help them and you want to help them through their journey. But then, you know, sometimes I've had it, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later, people have come back and said, I'm ready. So just because, you know, we have to have patience with our patients, with our clients, because they're unfolding with our own rhythm as well of unfoldment of that. Because, you know, you're born here. I don't know, whatever age, you're born at 0. You're here now. You could be 40, 42, 45, 50. And different things have happened along the way in your life. And our job is to try to get people back through those layers, back to innate health, which I think is our birthright, as I said earlier. But sometimes people will stop at certain parts of that journey because they're not ready yet to deal with that.
And that's such an important point. And for any like practitioners listening that are early on in their journey, that I used to take such responsibility for people's healing, and I would take it personally, and you know, have I done something wrong, have I not explained it, but that I used to get really sort of, yeah, just take it all on. And it's so important to, I think, absolutely, to realize that we can't.
No, and I learned that. I remember when I was studying, and I was on a podcast with Ian Watson recently, and I reminded him telling me this. I was probably in my second year, and he said, you don't take any credit for getting people better, and don't take any guilt if you don't. You're there to facilitate. And it's back to that idea of neutrality, that we are facilitators. We're just helping people to try to see for themselves, or try to, back to what we were saying before, back to that position where they can decide again. That can be with a remedy, which can bring that insight. That can also be a consultation that brings that insight.
Yeah, and that is such important thing. I have to say, sometimes when I hear people, homeopaths saying, oh, I cured so-and-so,
yeah,
I think, no, you didn't. You're like, no. It's always we're just the facilitator. We don't cure anything.
Just like the remedy, and I guess I say this a lot, in fact, I was saying it to students again today, the remedy is just a key to a lock. The key in itself is not powerful. So this is where we sometimes get in. Homeopaths fall into this trap as well, because we're so ingrained in us, the allopathic way of thinking, that the remedy has all the power. Like a drug has all the power. It doesn't. It's a key. The reason to give it makes it homeopathic.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's just pill, white pill. It's the reason for giving it that makes it homeopathic. So if you've got a laxis case, and the remedy's laxis, then it's the homeopathic remedy for that person. If they're an arsenicum, that's not the homeopathic remedy for them, because it's not going on the law of similars, or the like cures like. So I think people really, and I say this a lot, and I go over this a lot, because it's so simple, it's easy to miss and forget that the remedy is this tapping in to the natural healing wisdom of the body. Just like a car key with a car ignition. If it's the wrong key, you can't turn the ignition. But if it's the right key, the ignition starts and the engine starts to roar. But you don't need to keep turning the ignition, because it'll start to grind and make the horrible noise, because it's doing it itself. You've just got it going again. Now, if it sort of cuts out again after a while, then you redo the repeat thing. And this is the thing around dosage and potency and all these. You've really got to get that, I think, very clear, that homeopathy is different. just like an acupuncture needle, or stimulating the, you know, clearing the, stimulating the meridian points, or it's the same principle, really. You're gently trying to get the flow of the vital force and activate it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. What's actually, I want to ask you your, oh, there's so much I want to ask you, but I'm conscious of time. So potency.
Yeah.
Every homeopath has a different perspective on potency. Yeah. And I remember at college, like, it was always the question that we'd ask, what potency?
Yeah, still happens.
What's your, like, do you have a preferred potency, or
no,
is it?
No, I'll tell you my thing about potency. Okay, so you've got me on my, you got me on the thing that on my soapbox now. So back to what I just said about allopathic medicine, right? So if we think of it in an allopathic way, then we're going to say, what potency? What dosage was that? That to me doesn't make any sense, because it's about, you're using the potency. It's about stimulating the body to heal itself. So you're adjusting your potency to the vital force of the patient. So a 200, it doesn't mean anything. It depends what it is for that patient. So if their vital force is quite slow and quite sluggish and they're quite chronically sick, then what they're going to resonate with will be probably a lower potency. Maybe. But it, again, you, and when to decide to change potency is about down, back down to the individual vital force of the client or the patient. We don't determine it. The patient determines it at the time. If they're throwing a high fever and it's you know, they're burning up and there's a lot of energy, then you're probably going to go for a 200 Belladonna if it's indicated, because the energy is high, it's going to use that potency up quicker. So again, it goes back to that thing of, it's individual. It's the vital force of the person. And you let the vital force tell you what potency to give at that time. That's how I see it.
Yeah, totally. I remember actually in a very early clinic, one of my first ever clinics, and I think one of the first ever cases I ever took, it was I remember him so clearly, a boy. There was nothing really wrong with him. Like, there was nothing wrong with him, actually. Yeah. But his mum brought him in, and he was quite, like, obviously sulfur. And it was Susie that was doing the clinic then. Clinic supervisor, and Susie Della, who's amazing. And I said, you know, she was like, I said, what about potency? She said, give him a 1M. And I was like, what? There's nothing with him. She said, exactly. He's got a really good vital force.
There you go.
So, and I was like, oh, yeah. You know, it's really obvious. But I think it was, it's just.
Because we think of potency and strength and this and that. But that doesn't make any sense, because the more higher the potency, the more diluted it is. So, but people get stuck in that. Oh, God, 10M, what? And I tell you how I learned this. Well, this was a big eye opener for me when I used to work with a great cranial sacral therapist, Jed Sumner. He was based in London and he's now in Canada, and he runs a whole course in cranial sacral therapy, biodynamics. Great practitioner. And we used to work at a place called the Healthy Living Centre that we had in Islington in London, we'd often would refer each other patients. And what we would do is, say it was his client, he'd do a handover to me. I'd take the case of the patient, and then I would determine what remedy I was going to give. Now, I could be down to two or three remedies that I probably wanted to try with this person. So then what we used to do is he'd give the person a treatment, and whilst they're having a cranial sacral treatment, we would get the patient client to hold the remedy on the chest. Yeah. So now, to make it even better, I had an assistant who I would pass the remedy to, so you couldn't see it, would then pass it to the patient, who then would hold it to make sure there was no, you know, I wasn't trying to influence in any way. And sometimes I'd try two or three remedies, and I'd try all different potencies. And as they held it, he could feel the again, I'm not an expert in cranial sacral, I love cranial sacral therapy as a treatment, but he could feel the action of the remedy on the, what do they call it in cranial sacral, the tide or the, I don't know, we call it the vital force. He could feel the action of the remedy, and he would describe how he could feel the remedy starting to resonate with the person. And I would try, I would try 10M, right? So hold a 10M. No, nothing at all. Try to get into a 6C. Oh, wow, this is really powerful. Oh, wow, this is really growing. And I go back to try the 10M again, just to try to trick him, see if he, nothing. So it was never about the potency. My experience, they could react on a potency, like you give them a 6 to 30, well, they didn't react, then you give them a 1M or 10M, and then they, oh yeah, this is really starting to work. So that really, really, really brought it home to me that it's individual to the patient. The most important thing is the remedy. Is it an association with like cures like? Is it a law of similars? Does this match the person? Yes. Then the potency, I feel you're tuning in to the vital force. And whether or not they need a repeat of that, you listen to the vital force. Robin Murphy, the late great Robin Murphy, would say, we're not homeopaths, we're vital force practitioners. That's what we are. We're vital force practitioners, a bit like Tai Chi. You move with the vital force. You move with the vital force. Don't have any preconceived ideas of what to do. Let the vital force or the body show you where to go next. That means repeating potencies, changing potencies, aggravations or healing crises. We may have overstimulated. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And that's what's so hard, I think, what people, again, the difference from allopathic medicine is we've been outsource everything to the doctor, telling us, you know, how often to take, when to take. We don't listen to our bodies. We and people on my home prescribing courses struggle with, when do I repeat? How do I repeat? Because I'm like, you have to listen to the body. You have to trust your body. And we've been taught not to listen to our body.
Exactly. And again, we come with an allopathic thinking of dosages. Take antibiotics. You've got to finish the course. Take your paracetamol, take it twice, whatever it is. It's always this instruction. But that's for allopathic medicine, where you're talking with material doses. We're not talking about material doses. So when I hear a homeopath saying, oh, no, never give a 200 and a... It's like, that doesn't make sense to me, because now we're talking about it allopathically as though there's a material dose. In some of the books, I always remember this in a book called Homeopathic Drug Pictures by Margaret Tyler. She said, never give lycopodium, 200C in a case. And then she talks about why it was so bad and this patient aggravated. No, that was the wrong potency for that person at that time. It didn't mean that lycopodium 200 was this evil potency and powerful potency. How can it be? I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing it wrong, but from my experience, that's how I see it. You know, that's how I see it.
Do you know, right, so while we're talking about homeopathy being so different from allopathic medicine, I don't know. Now, I haven't looked at this guidance since the end of last year, so I can't remember exactly what it says. But the FDA guidance, have you looked into it? That was at the end of last year, FDA in the USA said that homeopathic medicines were now being illegally marketed because they didn't have FDA approval, and they wanted to basically ensure that homeopathic medicines start to get the same approval that any other medicine has, which is crazy, because how can homeopathic remedies, which are made based on physics, go through the same process as pharmaceutical products that are made with chemistry, that have a lot of funding, that can afford to do these studies? So that kicked off actually the end of last year, because I went on a podcast to talk about it with someone that was in the US. And I just wondered what your thoughts are about the FDA, and I think in Canada I hear as well, like tightening up regulations for homeopathy. Like, what does this potentially mean for us? Is it likely to happen in the UK?
Well, I think in the UK, we've already got the MHRA, and they've done a lot. I mean, we can't make claims at all about anything about remedies. So they're very, very, very hot on that, the MHRA. However, you can still buy remedies, you know, and that's the most important thing, if you can buy remedies. But even, you know, about the FDA thing in America, but this is my take on it, is it doesn't make sense to me, because one minute, if they're saying that it has to go through these strict guidance like they do with allopathic medicine, then they're saying that that homeopathy works and there's something in it. But if you can't have it both ways, you can't say, well, homeopathy is a lot, because science often say, I'm sure the FDA say it as well, like the MHRA, homeopathy is a lot of rubbish, nothing in it, it's all placebo. All right, that's the case. Then why does it need to go through all these strict regulations? It doesn't make sense. You're saying they're saying two different things.
Agreed. I didn't mean. There is a meme of, I don't know if you've seen it, it's like this cartoon, it's like a comic strip of like which button to press. And I put on it, on one hand, I put homeopathy is pseudoscience and quackery.
Yeah.
And on the other button, I put homeopathy is a dangerous drug that needs FDA approval. It's like, which way are you going to go?
So when they do that, it shows me that they do know what it can do. and they're trying to constrict it, and they're trying to limit it in some way. But you know, homeopathy has always had a special place in America, hasn't it? And I think it came, I can't remember all the history now of it in America, but it was had a special place. I think it came. Did it come under more like the supplements or the food?
It did, and I think I can't remember myself actually because I did look into this, but I think one of the like people that drafted the guidance used homeopathy.
That's right, exactly.
And carved it out, and the FDA have said it shouldn't be carved out. It needs to come under like the general guidance.
Yeah, but the fact is, the genie is already out of the bottle. They're never going to stop homeopathy. And as I said to you before, we were in very unique times where you can get things, you'd be able to get things. There's different ways of getting homeopathy. We could talk about remedy machines. I think the future, if I'm honest with you, and I really think this is the future, is obviously we've got wearables, but it's the next generation of wearables where you actually get the treatment of things. And I know this thing's already out there already, but I think this will become more and more mainstream around homeopathy. They're already doing it with acupuncture. You know, acupressure points from wearables. I think the future is much more around that. There was a lot of experiments done by Dr. Luc Montagnier, who's passed away, who won the Nobel Prize for describing the HIV virus. Again, his videos on YouTube, I don't know if you've seen it, Lisa, but I think it's about 2012, but he was following on from the experiments with Jack Benaviste, and he was basically sending the remedy. This is going to be out there. What I'm going to go out to say, but watch the YouTube film, this documentary, where he was sending the remedy over the internet, basically, you know, to the person.
It's amazing. I actually talk about that in my book.
There you go.
It's a little reference because it is like.
There you go.
It sounds bonkers.
It is. It's crazy. It sounds crazy, but that is the future, and the future is, I feel, it won't be from a pharmacy. It won't be like the remedy that you buy from the store anymore. It's going to be much more like that, like on the electromagnetic field, if that, for want of a better word. So that's what I think. I'm not saying it's going to be right, but that's what I think. I think we have to embrace technology. I think there's got to have balance with it, but also looking where things are going with that. And it works. We know it works. Like remedy machines. I mean, we haven't got time to talk about that, but remedy machine. I broadcast on remedy machines from very, very sick people. In fact, we had a student sharing their story about their father, who I won't tell the story now, but basically was helped with a remedy machine, the broadcast. So there's, what's that expression from Shakespeare? There's more to heaven and earth than, I'm not really good at my Shakespeare. I can't remember what the quote is now, but basically there's more to life than what we see.
Totally. And do you know what? We need to do a follow up at some point because remedy machines, people are fascinated by. I've recently got a Healy, which can do homeopathy remedies. And I'm just like, sometimes I just think someone might have me sectioned if they could see. Like, I'm scared, you know, vibrating the Healy onto friends and family that aren't even in the same room and they're saying it works. And I'm like, what is this? It's just bonkers.
Listen, exactly. Well, I'm very much into biohacking. I'm a big biohacking fan and I do a lot of research on different things out there in the biohacking world. And it's incredible what's coming out. It really is. And that's why I said about it's like where technology meets health. It's quite incredible, you know, it really is quite incredible. And the more that we learn about it, but again, all of it, whether or not, like I've got a big thing here, a big UV infrared panel here that I stand in front of every day. I've got my Aura ring that's tracking my sleep and my, you know, my heart rate variability and all. The more that you use these things, but remember, it's just tapping in back to what I said at the beginning. You've already got it. We've all already got it. We've got that healing wisdom within us. And all these things are tapping into that. And to me, that is a much more empowering place to start. You start that you're perfect, you're not broken, you've already got it. It's everything. So yeah, it's great. It's like it's just like I said about the beginning, we're in the golden age, not just of homeopathy, of healing and consciousness and thought and community and sharing these ideas.
That is a very powerful note, which I want to kind of I'm conscious of time to wrap up on. But before we do, is there anything else that you want to say to the listeners now? I think we need to do a follow-up because
absolutely. You know me, I love talking. God, I can't believe it's gone so quick.
I know we haven't discussed that agrohomeopathy actually. Is there anything
Oh, well,
you
that's
want?
A whole thing in itself. Yeah, I love it. I could tell you so many stories about this and research and things. It's so amazing. Homeopathy on, well, they're using, farmers are using it now in different countries of the world and acres of crops, and incredible, incredible stuff. Incredible stuff.
Oh, we'll have to do a follow-up that, because that is
Definitely.
really, really fascinating. And where can people, if they want to get in touch with you or find out more, what's the best
Well,
way
I mean, the
for
best
people
place
to reach out?
probably with homeopathy is www.chehomeopathy.com. My website's about to be launched as well, with about myself. So, but that's not ready yet. So just go on to chehomeopathy.com. And for everybody, there's a free home prescriber courses on there. There's different stuff that we do. Yeah, just check us out, because we also do a lot of free webinars and information, as well as practitioner courses. Really, it's from beginners all the way up to postgraduate level that we do. Just spreading the word of homeopathy around the world.
An amazing job that you do. So thank you,
Thank you,
Marcus,
Lisa.
so
Very pleasure.
much.
And keep on with this podcast. Keep on going with it. It's great. It's
I
fantastic.
will do. Thank you.